Jenny Orr Thomas. This is Health Stewardship Through Nutrition. For those of you that haven't been to my sessions, I'm a family practitioner from Hastings, Minnesota. Been there for 13 years. And this series comes out of my interest in getting people excited about taking responsibility for themselves and doing good things for themselves, not out of obligation or guilt, but out of joy of being God's creatures. So let's begin with a word of prayer. Dear Lord, thank you for your entire creation, for creating us with our bodies and our ability to enjoy the goodness of your earth. Thank you for the joy of food and of the fellowship that goes with us. Help us to care for our bodies and feed them both spirit and physically with your word and your treasures. Amen. But the first thing we talk about is why we eat. That sounds like a real stupid question. But I think if we think about it, we'll see that there's a lot more to it than the beginning of the question. Why do we eat?
The main reason should be to
live,
provide energy to your body.
Energy.
Fellowship.
Okay.
Pleasure.
Okay.
Boredom.
Okay. Hey, I've got an honest group here.
Stay awake.
Yeah. Pick up.
Habit.
Yeah. Every time I go past the refrigerator, I open it. Right. Yeah. I understand that one. Mm-hmm. Other thoughts? I think the thing I just wanted to get across is while our need for taking in foodstuffs has to do with energy and biological life, that is actually only a small part of what drives our behavior around food. And some of those are excellent uses of food, such as fellowship. What examples? Let's talk a little bit about eating as fellowship.
Yeah. My sister and I get together for lunch about every couple weeks, and we wouldn't spend the time talking with each other if we didn't have a reason to get together.
Okay.
Because we each have we love each other, and there's 10 years difference in our ages, and so our interests are considerably different. And so we just make a point of getting together for lunch.
Okay. So it gives us a commonality. We all have to feed our bodies. We all have to get nourishment. And it can bridge some gaps, as she describes. Some more thoughts about...
Have you ever noticed if you have a group for dinner that once you've gotten sort of through the meal, that the conversation begins to flow more? That seems to happen every time I sit down with a group of people. We start talking more after we've eaten.
So there's an intimacy.
Mm-hmm. It's created somehow through...
That's created through the meal. Can we look back in Scripture? I think that for those of us who find much of our meaning in our Christian faith, I think we can attach some validity and deepen our understanding of what that's all about by looking at. Can you think of some of the meal-related things that we remember from Scripture? What can you remember from the Old Testament about meals?
They complained a lot.
Hey, you think your kids complain about food?
Okay, so
the manna. Okay, so as a sign of God's providence, in the case, can we think even before the manna? What are some of the, can you think of a couple of meals before that?
Well, Adam and Eve took the apple.
Okay, so the forbidden fruit.
And he blamed that woman for doing it.
Yeah, we learned about that one this morning. Okay, so a negative related to food.
Jacob.
At the pottage, okay. You're coming up with some I wasn't thinking of, but... okay. What's the great ritual meal of the Old Testament?
Passover.
Passover, okay. And so right before the Israelites left Egypt, there was this great meal in anticipation of what God was going to do for them. It had some ritualistic aspects of identifying themselves as God's community. And that became a ritual remembrance meal as time went on in their community. What was involved in the Passover? Can anybody just run quickly through some of the foods of the Passover?
Lamb or the...
Okay.
Goat.
Yeah.
The bitter herbs.
Okay, herbs.
Unleavened.
Okay. Just because I can spell it faster. Matzos.
I don't know if the wine is mentioned specifically, but
okay.
I think it is.
It certainly was a part of the ritual by the time of the New Testament. Anything else?
Fish part of it?
I don't believe so. I bet my daughter, who was here just a minute ago, could have spelled this. I'm not sure I spelled that right. Cherezoth, it's a mixture of apples and spices and other things that symbolizes the mortar of the bricks that they made in Egypt. I want to go through that simply because I think the most complicated thing in here is the cherezoth, which is, I think, a mixture of one or two spices and two fruits. I mean, this is not a complex meal, but it was a meal of great ritual meaning to the people of the Old Testament. How were you supposed to eat the Passover?
Standing with your sandals on.
Okay, but there were some directions as to who you were supposed to eat the meal with. Okay. And the definition of family.
Household.
Was the household, and there were directions that if you didn't have enough people to eat a whole lamb or a whole goat, you had to get together with other families. About 12 to 20 people. This is a community event. Not community as we would say today in terms of the whole town, but this was not a private little thing that you did by yourself. It was something that you did with your community. Obviously, what's our parallel? Okay. And think about it. What's involved physically? Okay. Very simple. I'd be willing to bet your church doesn't have any fancier communion wine than mine does. We're talking way down the list. But this is also a meal of the community. In fact, there are some rules, at least in most of the mainline churches, about when and under what circumstances you can celebrate the Eucharist. And it revolves around being a part of the community and not being a private one-on-one sort of thing. We certainly take the elements and the blessings of the Eucharist to those who cannot join the group but in the name of the group and as part of that community. I mentioned this stuff, got kind of a little bit off, so that we can see that, yes, the fellowship part of eating is very important, but it does not have to involve fancy foods. That the main portion of the fellowship part of eating is the who and the ritual meaning behind it. Let's talk just a minute about rituals around eating. Anybody have any family rituals they'd be willing to share?
Little biscuit Christmas time.
Okay. So, yeah, we can all have a good laugh about that, especially those of us that do it but don't eat it. I've also heard that written as Lutheran fish.
Ham, Easter.
Okay.
Ham.
Okay. Can you think of, these are sort of cultural things. Any of you have anything that you do as a family? I know in my family, when I came home from college, there was always a cross-rib roast in the oven when I got home. And that was a family ritual. It had to be cross-rib. No good reason, it's just the way we did it. Anything that you have kids that might want something special for their birthday dinner?
Chocolate cake with chocolate frosting.
Okay, so chocolate cake. Chocolate with chocolate for birthday. Okay.
Well, even having candles on the birthday cake, yeah. Which is kind of a general, everybody does.
Oh, I don't think everybody does, but these are rituals related to food.
Wedding cake,
okay.
You put Advent candles there.
Okay. If you put them on the dinner table, I'll put them there.
Yeah. We try to up the spirituality of our children, but they follow who would light and who would extinguish.
Sure. But that became part of your mealtime ritual. In our family, that was part of the bedtime ritual, and I wouldn't put it with food. But clearly, in some families, that is.
Yes. Holding hands when we say our table prayer.
Okay. Okay. So some of these rituals don't even involve food. They may involve eating occasions, but holding hands for grace, putting candles on the cake, lighting Advent candles, aren't even the food themselves. Any of you have any other rituals that don't involve food, but that are not foods themselves, but are around eating, such as anybody have a special plate that they put the cake on, or a special plate that they put the bread on? Have a special tablecloth you use for that family reunion every year? That our rituals don't have to involve the food itself. This may seem to have gotten a little off the subject, but I think we can bring it back. The whole point here is to make us aware of the fact that eating involves more than the nutrition value of the food itself. What are the nutrients that we actually need in our food? What are the chemical building blocks we're looking for when we eat?
Protein.
Okay. Protein.
Carbohydrates.
Carbohydrates.
Minerals.
Okay. Minerals.
Some fats, not much.
Okay. Fats are essential. We can talk about how much in a minute. Okay.
Vitamins.
Anything else?
Liquid, I suppose.
Okay.
Blood.
And that is the only liquid, actually, when you derive down to the basics of it. Okay. Six things. protein, carbohydrates, fats, minerals, vitamins, and water. Sounds pretty simple. Now, I wrote down next American malnutrition. And what does this word say?
Bad.
Okay. Bad nutrition. Not necessarily over or under. It can be either. Inappropriate is the word for our problem. There are very few people in our country who do not get enough calories. There are very few people in our country who get too little protein, which are the major worldwide sources of undernutrition. But what are some of the things that we get too much of or too little of in this country?
Too much fat.
Okay, fat.
Sugar.
Sugar, okay.
Salt.
Salt.
We get too little of the grains and,
okay,
and I don't know what you call them, carbohydrates, but they're
fiber, carbohydrates. I'm not spelling that word today too well. Anything else we're missing in the American diet or have too much of?
We probably get too few vitamins as well because we eat too much of things that don't contain vitamins.
Vitamins and minerals, possibly.
Okay, too many empty calories. Mm-hmm. Okay. Any particular, I heard somebody say minerals.
Yeah.
Which minerals in particular are you concerned about?
Calcium, for instance.
Okay.
Iron.
Iron. Okay. One other thing we maybe get too much of? One of the basics here.
Protein.
Okay. Any idea how much protein the average, basically healthy adult needs?
It isn't a lot.
Mm-mm. No.
2-3 ounce servings a day, isn't it?
Okay, okay. 2 to 3 ounce servings per day is what's listed as the minimum daily requirement. How big is a 3 ounce serving? Yep. Hey, we got a knowledgeable group here.
But there's protein in a lot of other stuff.
Absolutely. We're going to talk a lot more about that. So even if you use the relatively liberal terms of the FDA, 2 to 3 ounce servings of a high-protein food a day, each of them the size of a deck of playing cards. Have you ever gone into a restaurant and ordered a piece of meat and got one the size of a deck of playing cards? What would you think if his restaurant served you something the size of a deck of playing cards?
Cheap.
Right. But that's really all we need. Now, that's lean meat that's trimmed of fat and bone. One pork chop, 1/2 a chicken breast, 1 leg thigh of a chicken. So sometimes we don't get a lot more than that. Sometimes a serving of chicken, for instance, might be just that. But oftentimes when we order beef, they often have 3 cuts of prime rib. What sizes are they? Usually 10, 12, and 16 ounces.
But even the petite steak, which is what I order, if I order steak, which is so rare, 6 ounces.
Uh-huh.
It's twice as much as I need.
That's 6 ounces before cooking. So the lean weight of that is probably only 4.5 to 5, which is still more than you need.
Still more than I need.
But it's significantly less than the 20-ounce porterhouse has on it. Okay, so we've identified some nutrients we get too much of and that we get too little of. Calcium and iron, we talked about calcium on Saturday. Iron is one I probably should say a little bit about. Iron is present at about 1 gram per 100 calories of a basic nutritional diet. The minimum daily requirement for a man or a non-menstruating woman is approximately 10 milligrams. So 1,000 calories of decent quality food is all you need if you're male. or if you're a woman past menopause. And almost all of us eat at least 1,000 calories. We may have a little trouble with that being good quality food. For a menstruating woman or a child, we're talking 18 milligrams. And many women who are not very physically active are balanced at 15, 18, 2,000 calories, and therefore can be on the edge and at nutritional risk. The byproduct of this is that women who are not menstruating and men do not need to take vitamins with iron, and in fact can get iron overloaded by doing so. For women who have periods, for growing children, that's a different story. But it's still very doable with diet. I mean, most of us are active enough to eat 1,800 calories, and most of us eat considerably more than that. So we've got quite a list of things that we get too much of and things that we get too little of. Next thing I thought that we would talk about a little bit, and someone did mention it, and that's the whole issue of meat. And I can think of three places in the Bible it talks about specifically the whole idea of eating meat. Can anybody come up with them quickly?
Don't eat cooked animals. What did they didn't eat?
Okay, okay. At this point, I don't want to get into which animals you can and can't eat.
Okay.
But the issue of eating meat or not eating meat, where is the first... For those of you that have been coming to the Bible study yesterday and today, this should be an easy question. What's the first mention of what humankind was to eat? Somebody got a Bible? There's a couple way in there. Somebody look up Genesis. Oh, there's Kendall's knowledge. Genesis 1:25. Oh, no, I'm sorry, 1:29.
And God said, "Behold, I have given you every plant yielding seed which is upon the face of all the earth, and every tree with seed in its fruit, you shall have them for food."
Okay. So in Genesis 29:30, God gave Adam and Eve all the plants, except the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, which we all know about, as food. And so... obviously, they weren't vegetarians through the whole Old Testament. Where did we get explicit biblical permission to eat meat?
Genesis 3.
No. Don't think you'll find that in Genesis 3.
Passover?
No. Came before that. Anybody remember? You don't remember the chapter and verse, but where in the biblical story did man get explicit? Did humankind get explicit permission to eat meat? I got somebody curious here.
They were supposed to sacrifice the lambs, but they didn't eat those.
They did eat, depending on which kind of sacrifice, they did eat parts of the sacrifice. In fact, the person who gave the sacrifice got a certain part of it, and the priest who did the sacrifice got a certain part of it to eat. So that comes later. Where did we get permission to eat meat?
Is it the creation story?
No, that's where we got permission to eat plants.
Well, Nimrod was a hunter, but I don't know.
Okay, okay. Somebody mentioned that Nimrod was a hunter. Try Genesis 9. What happens in 6 through 9? Genesis 6 through 9. Story of who?
Noah.
Okay. So it's after the flood. Genesis?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, Genesis 9, 3 and 4. One of you two that's got a Bible out. Give us that one. Yeah. Okay. Somebody read it nice and loud, please.
Every moving thing that lives shall be food for you, and as I gave you the green plants, I give you everything. Only you shall not eat flesh with this life that is its blood.
Okay. We could spend a lot of time on that one too, and we won't. But it was after the flood that God gave humankind flesh to eat. I couldn't find the reference, and I didn't have time to go to the library and get out a concordance. There is one discussion that I can think of in the New Testament about eating meat. Can anybody remember what that one, that story is about? It's in one of the, it's in one of the epistles.
Because the Paul was it with the Gentiles that they would not eat the meat of the blood.
Okay. There was, he did enjoin, in fact, that's an act, that the Gentiles should not eat meat with the blood in it because of this whole issue of life that we heard in the Genesis passage. There's also a passage about not eating meat sacrificed to idols.
Yeah.
And what was the purpose of not eating meat sacrificed to idols?
People might think they're bleeding.
Right. There was nothing wrong with the meat.
Yeah.
Paul goes on and on about how it won't hurt you a bit, but it might hurt your neighbor. Because he might think you believe in that idol. So one of the things that we're told in that passage is to look at our eating behavior and its effect not just on our bodies, but on the world around us and the people around us. So thinking about that, and we've already decided what's wrong with the American diet in many respects, there are certainly some people who would think that we may want to refrain from eating meat. What would be some of the reasons for that? And I am not, before anybody gets way up on their high horse, I am not going to advocate vegetarian lifestyle as being the way to go. But I think it's something that we need to think about and at least make some conscious decisions where meat fits in our lives. What might be some of the reasons to eat meat or not eat meat? And don't think just in terms of why would you eat meat or not eat meat, but what are some of the arguments?
Well, one of the reasons given is that so much of our grains are used to fatten the cattle that are slaughtered for meat.
Oh,
and they could feed many more people if they used the grains as food.
So ecological and social justice issues might suggest refraining or reducing meat use. Okay?
Well, then there's the animal people that don't want, what do they call it?
Animal rights.
Rights, yeah.
Okay.
Runsy's crazy.
Okay. What are some other reasons? For or against?
Good reason is a supply of protein.
To get protein.
Well, it certainly increases the cost of food.
Okay, so a negative is the cost. What are some other positives? Why is it when a lot of people leave Holden, they head directly for the steakhouse?
Tastes good.
Tastes good, okay.
I was thinking about that this morning.
Okay. And we talked about the rituals of food, and tasting good is certainly one of them. Anything else that might go on either side of this?
I think habit plays into it too, because we grew up eating meat and potatoes.
Sure. We were raised as meat eaters, so we're still meat eaters. Strange thing about that.
Positive also is the way some people make their living.
Okay.
So it helps with the economy.
So economic.
Okay. It's also, I think, a little easier to plan a meal around the main course of meat than it is to figure out how to get balanced protein.
We're not used to planning that meal without meat, it seems like.
Okay.
A large
meal. That goes with habit, but but we, let's face it, we shop at carnivores grocery stores. We have the prepared food. How many people eat out at least once a week?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, okay. How many of the restaurants you go to have a vegetarian alternative? I was totally amazed. We came out here on Amtrak, and Amtrak has a vegetarian alternative, and I just about dropped my jaw. So it's not always very common. You know, you get kind of hungry eating the salad at McDonald's every time you go there. The plain salad. Okay. Any other issues here on the negative side?
Well,
Any of you?
It affects your health.
Okay. Health? Okay. You want to share anything that you might know about health and vegetarian diet?
I have a son who's a vegetarian and his cholesterol level is wonderful.
Okay, so decreased cholesterol is certainly one of the things you might be looking at. I wanted just to mention here.
The keeping quality, you can keep beans.
Dry beans a lot longer.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay.
And you're ready to be able to haul meat or, you know, you have to freeze it, refrigerate it or something. Dry it.
I can't spell, so we'll use that term, food keeping. And clearly, I've got a vegetarian backpacking book here that I happened to pulled out what I thought people might be interested in looking at. And, you know, I have another vegetarian backpacking book at home. And without going to REI or Burger Brothers or someplace and buying the $4 or $5 a serving dried stuff, it's amazing what you can do if you, unfortunately, the one thing you need is fuel. To cook vegetarian on the trail. And that's another issue I can talk to people about because there are some ways around that too. So food keeping. Let's talk a little bit more about the health issues. When they study longevity in this country, what are some of the groups that they use for comparison? Any idea what groups?
Blacks.
Okay.
Seventh-day Adventists.
Ah, yes, good. So Seventh-day Adventists, and there's one other group that they use.
The Oriental.
Okay, Oriental. I don't have any particular studies. There are clear studies that Oriental people following their traditional nutritional practices versus ones that have adopted American diet, the ones with the American diet, do not come out ahead. There's another group, another religious group besides Seventh-day Adventists that are often used for comparison studies.
Mennonites?
Mormons. The Mennonites maybe, but I'm aware of the Mormons. Okay. What are the differences between Seventh-day Adventists and Mormons' diets and habits than the rest of us?
Seventh-day Adventists don't eat meat.
Okay.
No coffee.
So they're mostly vegetarian.
Yeah.
You don't have to be vegetarian to be a Seventh-day Adventist, but it helps. What other things do they avoid?
Caffeine.
Okay. Caffeine. And what else?
Tobacco.
Tobacco.
Alcohol.
Tobacco and alcohol.
And alcohol. Okay. And you will find the Mormons do the same. They're not as strictly vegetarian as the Seventh-day Adventists. But I actually have a very interesting cookbook that a Mormon friend gave me that comes directly from their secondary scripture called the Doctrine and Covenants that says that meat is to be eaten in time of need, but that the major portion of the diet is to avoid or reduce the use of meat. They also go one step further than the Seventh-day Adventists, and besides avoiding caffeine, they also avoid carbonated beverages and hot beverages. So you can't have your cocoa or your 7-Up. But both of these groups have significantly reduced rates of what diseases?
Heart disease.
Okay, decreased heart disease, atherosclerotic cardiovascular disease. What else? Okay.
Strokes, CVAs.
Okay. Okay, one other.
Cancer.
Okay. So I think that for a variety of reasons, we have to at least look at our intake of meat. Now, the Poland food philosophy has looked at that. Anybody want to go over the 4 points of the Holden food philosophy? Maybe somebody who's been here a while would know what those 4 points are.
Before you do that, could I ask you, I wonder, do they serve eggs or cheese?
Oh, there's cheese here all the time.
Oh, I just wondered, we've only been here about, what, 30?
Oh, okay.
We haven't had any. Well, cheese on some.
Oh, yeah, there's been cheese. They don't very often serve eggs, visible eggs, but a lot of the other
French toast are
held together with eggs or things like French toast. So definitely do it. The whole food philosophy does not directly speak about eating or not eating meat as an absolute. And in fact, they do serve meat here, and they serve it more often now than they used to. But what are the 4 points to the Holden food philosophy?
All I've ever heard is that they high fiber on the food chain.
Okay. Low on the food chain. What does that mean?
Eat more
fiber?
More
grains.
Okay. Whole grains. Okay. What else does it mean?
Legumes.
Okay. You know, I've seen beans a couple of times, but I have that the infamous lentil loaf has not appeared yet since I've been here. And so we've got rice, et cetera, as one of the grains. What they talk about officially is alternate protein sources. And someone mentioned legumes, they mentioned whole grains. What else? What was in the rice the other night?
I think there was some tofu in that.
Okay.
Tofu in that one mix.
Tofu.
Tofu.
That's a soybean cheese. What has appeared in some of the salads? I don't know that since those of you that just got here this weekend have had any, but...
Oh, cheese, nuts.
Nuts, okay.
Yeah, they do serve nuts.
We mentioned cheese, eggs, legumes, combinations. Things like... I'm sorry?
Bread.
Okay, yeah. The grains as a source of protein along with something else. Anyone who's interested in learning more about how to get protein from sources other than meat that are worried about it, this is an excellent book. It's been out for a long time. It's called Diet for a Small Planet by Frances Moore Lappe. It's in the bookstore. She also has one called Recipes for a Small Planet. I don't find her recipes to be as good as some of the ones in this one, which is called The New Laurel's Kitchen. I noticed it up on the Holden book list for, and they said it's $5. Well, the old one was about this size, and maybe it was $5. This one I think is more like $15. Mm-hmm. But this one has some excellent bread recipes, excellent soup recipes. There are two that, for Minnesotans, are close to biblical, and because these come out of Ely, Minnesota. Anybody who's ever been to the Moosewood Restaurant in Ely, Minnesota. There's the Moosewood Cookbook. The one I happened to find was The Enchanted Broccoli Forest, which are, hey, you got to be creative in how you describe it, too, if you want to get husbands and children to eat it. But yeah, it's from the Moosewood Restaurant in Ely, Minnesota, and the Moosewood Cookbook and the Enchanted Broccoli Forest. But I think just to let people know that there are, one of the things we had down as one of the negatives was that one of the positives for eating meat is it's easy. And it becomes easier the more resources you have. I think the main thing that, we've got a couple more things to get the Holden food philosophy out here. Low on the food chain, alternate protein sources. So the alternate protein sources is officially listed as number one, and my pen is running out here. Number two is to use the whole foods. Number one was the alternate protein sources. Number three, what about cooking? I'm sorry?
Your mom cooking, I don't know what you call it. Like stir fry?
Okay, well, we had stir fry last night, but the idea of cooking simply, if you've noticed, the meals here tend to be a salad and a soup and bread, or a main course and a salad or a vegetable and a fruit. Seldom will you see, besides bread, more than three things on the table, and sometimes not that much here. That and using everything. So things like making soup stock from the peelings and the trimmings and things of that sort. They do use a fair amount of herbs and spices, but you don't see fancy multiple ingredient sorts of things. And anybody want to come up with the last one? Because even I'm blanking on that one at the moment.
Well, take what you need, but don't take more than you need.
Yeah. And I think that's not the official one, but the whole idea, like we talked about as our last one yesterday, sufficiency. And seeing food as a celebration and mealtime as a celebration. We talked back at the very beginning about why do we eat what we eat, and seeing food as a celebration sort of says something to eating out of habit, boredom, things of that sort. I think a lot of our problems with obesity in our country come not from a lack of knowledge. I would say every person who's concerned about obesity in my practice already knows what a 1,200 calorie diet is.
Yeah.
And you know what they ought to eat. But when I sit and talk to them, you know, where do you have problems with eating? Well, when I get bored, I eat. When I feel down, I eat. Well, when I have a fight with my boyfriend, I eat. We tend to have turned to food for the fellowship we're not getting from our fellow
don't
humans.
You think too, when we were little and our children are little, to appease them, we give them something to eat to keep them quiet, you know?
Okay.
To make them happy.
So that's a habit that we've learned, yeah. Is when you don't feel good, eat.
Yeah.
And if we see our bodies as a part of God's creation to celebrate, then we don't want to teach ourselves or to teach our children to get love from food. Love comes from God. Love comes through other people. It comes from feeling good about ourselves, not from feeling full in our stomachs. Yes?
And so many people are living alone these days. Singles are, what, 50% of the population? That must compound the problem, too. I mean, eating alone is a more difficult thing, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. And there are certainly ways to deal with that. I lived alone from the time I got out of college till I got married, which was 7 years later. And there are certainly ways around that. But that is an issue, especially for our older population. I see a lot of older people who, I just don't want to go to all the work of making a meal. And I think there are ways to pre-prepare food. I mean, microwave is the best thing that ever happened to single people. And with a microwave, there is no excuse for not eating healthy, because you can make up 10 servings of something you like, and you can put 9 of them in the freezer, and you don't have to eat them. I remember as a kid, we cooked on Saturday, and we ate the same thing until about Thursday. And there's a lot of people who couldn't handle that. They get pretty bored here, but I think that there are ways around that now. Let's talk a little bit about the, you can't get somebody who's really got a medical background not to go through the food chart. Everybody remember those old basic four food groups that were popular for about the last 20 years?
They've changed it
on us, but that, just because that's what we're most familiar with, what are the four basic food groups?
Meat.
Okay. I'm going to call that protein, because that's what it's always been, although we've often translated that into meat.
Dairy.
Okay, dairy. And the reason that was a separate group was to get us to get our calcium that we said was a problem. Yeah?
Starches.
I'm sorry?
Starches or carbohydrates.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry, I couldn't hear. Starches. And what was the other one?
Fruits and veggies.
Okay. Okay. And they used to tell us to have two servings here and two to four depending on your age there and four plus with the starches and four of the fruits and vegetables. And so then in their great wisdom, they came out with this pyramid, which is about the only visual aid I brought with me. What are they telling us now with the pyramid? Why did they change it from just this basic four, and they often put that as kind of a square, and I don't know that there was any direct correlation between what went in which square. Why did they design the pyramid? What was that to tell us?
What you should eat most of and what you should eat least
of. Okay, so what's the bottom of the pyramid?
The carbohydrates.
Okay, so we got our pennants running out here. So we've got our pyramid power, and that pyramid power is not something you sit in. It's the idea of what's the foundation, and that's the starches. And what's the purpose of the starches?
Energy.
Energy, okay. And you're also going to get a lot of B vitamins from this, and you're going to get some protein. Now, why is it that we don't depend on our grains for protein alone?
Not complete.
Okay, not complete protein. What are some of the things that will complete and make more useful the protein that we get from our starches?
Combining it with other things.
Okay, such as?
I suppose legumes,
okay.
Vegetables.
Okay. Primarily combining either two different starches, such as corn with wheat or corn with rice, or to combine it with something from the legume family of a dairy product or nuts and seeds of some kind. Fruits and vegetables are not, in general, great sources of protein and not usually when you're doing the direct thinking. The other thing is variety. And I think if nothing else, just to tell people that if you get a good variety, you probably don't have to worry about most nutrients. People who totally avoid certain food groups or certain nutrients, somebody who won't eat anything that's acidic because they have lots of heartburn, may have to worry about vitamin C. But somebody who says, I can't stand cantaloupe, so can't stand cantaloupe. What's cantaloupe good for? It's good for vitamin C. What else is good for vitamin C?
Food fruits.
Okay. Citrus fruits, tomatoes, yeah. You name it. Strawberries, there's all kinds of ways. So if you don't touch any fruit at all, or if you're like my husband's cousin, who's the only thing he would even look at as a vegetable was lettuce, I hear parents who will tell me, oh, my child, just won't eat their vegetables. Well, what will they eat? Oh, he'll eat some broccoli and maybe some corn and, maybe a green bean on it. Well, just because he won't eat tomatoes, don't worry about it. But you can't ignore whole food groups. So starches are basic. What's the next level on the pyramid?
Fruits and vegetables.
Okay. And what's the purpose of the fruits and vegetables?
Oh, vitamins, minerals, fiber.
Okay. And so are the whole grains. your best source of fiber, and I was talking with somebody who's been on the staff here this summer, and he was saying better get his cholesterol checked, and maybe once he got back to civilization, his bowels would behave. At least more the way he was used to them behaving. Because if we eat whole foods, if we use whole grains, we get a great deal of fiber. Major source of fiber is the bran and whole grains. There is fiber in fruits and vegetables, but do you know how much lettuce it takes to equal one bowl of bran flakes? Two heads. Skip the lettuce when you're looking for high fiber, because it's mostly water. But some of your fruits, especially the fruits that start with P, peaches, pears, prunes, plums, pineapple, can be good sources of fiber too. But basically, you're going to get day in and day out your best fiber from your whole grains. Okay, so how much of the vegetables are we supposed, fruits and veggies are we supposed to be getting?
5 to 6 servings.
Okay, 5+ servings per day. And of that, we need to get a high vitamin C fruit and at least 3 times a week a high vitamin A vegetable. We just talked about the vitamin C fruits. What are the vitamin A vegetables?
Carrots
for one.
Okay. Deep green and deep yellow vegetables. Carrots, squash, broccoli, asparagus.
Cabbage.
Cabbage is high in vitamin C. It's not particularly high in vitamin A. So you got the picture. And that doesn't mean you have to be you don't have to live in the enchanted broccoli forest every day. It does mean on a regular basis. Okay, what's the next level above fruits and vegetables? Okay. Protein, and I'm trying to remember where they put, and they put, the other thing they put up here on this level?
Dairy.
Dairy, okay. And the reason that dairy is separate from the rest of the proteins is to push calcium. So protein, which you can get down on this level if you're careful about it. You don't have to go into meat or even into nuts to get this material if you're careful, and calcium. I think in the United States we do have to be careful. Other sources of calcium besides dairy are primarily the fish that is cooked well enough that you eat the bones, such as canned salmon and canned sardines, and deep green leafy vegetables like broccoli and spinach and things of that sort, but it takes a lot of those to get much calcium, and it is bound in a form that's not as usable as we might like. But again, variety is where you pick it up. Now, what's up there at the top? Fats and simple sugars. That's where your jam, jelly, candy, chocolate, and lovely stuff. Sit. And what? How much of this are we supposed to use?
What is it, 15 grams?
Sparingly is the official title of that section. And so it's just another way of looking. We had 7 food groups when I was in grade school, and then we had 4, and now we've got a pyramid that's funny thing. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Now we're back up to a few more, but the point is good variety, being aware of where your nutrients come from and what kinds of proportions make sense. Now, something I wanted to get to, and we're 3 minutes.
Can I just ask you a question on that pyramid?
Sure.
Did I not read that it was tampered with by lobbyists?
Yeah, they were planning to put these two up even higher. There is more emphasis on meat in the pyramid due to the beef industry lobbies than there needs to be.
Were there also dairy?
Yeah, and I don't think the pyramid emphasizes the need for calcium to the extent that I think much of our population needs to hear that message. The two messages they really wanted to get across is that we ought to go back to our starches as the main focus of our meals rather than our meats. My husband's a wonderful man and he's learning over time, but when I first met Dan, his idea of an ideal meal was a 16-ounce steak and a can of green beans. And when I first met him, I said, boy, the guy understands vegetables! But it took years before I was eating on the exchange plan pretty much when I met him. It was, you know, you have a meat and a starch and a vegetable and a fruit, and that was just kind of the way I planned meals. And Dan was sort of, you know, starch isn't that optional, and that's if you're hungry. That's just to fill you up. And I think that we did leave a message. There was a message among the diet gurus about 20 years ago that starches were bad. Starches were empty calories. And, you know, we have to have calories and proper starches. I mean, white bread with butter on it doesn't have a lot of nutrition to it, especially if there's more butter than bread. And, you know, when I'm talking starches, we're not talking pasta with a creamy sauce on it. We're not talking cinnamon rolls with icing. We're talking about rice. We're talking about, you know, there's nothing wrong with a baked potato. It's just sour cream and butter to put on it. The baked potato is wonderful. It's got lots of vitamins. It's got lots of fiber if you eat the skin. But what do? They put a lot of butter and sour cream on the inside part of the potato and throw the skin out. That's where our problem with starches has been, is what we put on them. But still, when you look at a diet like we're eating here at Holden, even if I put a little butter or margarine on my bread, think of the fat I've saved in not having the hamburger or in not having the steak. You can put a fair amount of butter on your bread if you don't do it with the steak. I think
that's, is it real butter they're serving?
I don't know.
I wonder, not that, you know, if I don't eat much of either one, but...
Yeah, I'm not a connoisseur. I just, you know, it keeps the jelly from soaking in. But I think it's margarine. I'm not sure. I have not seen it in the container. That would be something to ask the kitchen staff. But also because of the lower on the food chain thing, I think it probably is. Let's talk a little bit about changes. I've been having a good time here and saying, well, yeah, I can live on this vegetarian food. I even avoided eating the fish on Sunday and I didn't miss it. And it was kind of like, wow, this is the first time I've tried to go vegetarian and I haven't missed the meat. But I also know that when I go home, it isn't going to work so easy because somebody isn't going to lay a vegetarian alternative out on the back counter for me and say, all you have to do is come and get it. What are some of the changes that realistically we can make to change some of those things we get too much of in America and we get too little of? What are some of the things that we can do easy?
I was going to say, just for eating out in a restaurant, when you're talking about the serving, for many years now, my husband and I usually divide it at the restaurant.
Okay.
And most restaurants are very nice about that.
So to divide a restaurant meal is a way to get less meat. Okay.
So order instead of dessert.
Okay. And certainly, I am a dessert freak. I got into the bad habit of the meal isn't over until you've had dessert.
But you can make some very good desserts. We eat quite a bit of Wren pudding for dessert. Which is made with skim milk, egg whites, raisins in it, and leftover bread. And I use whole wheat bread.
Okay.
And I don't put any fat in it, and it works very well.
So
we like it. But then we put milk, you know, maybe put a little milk on it and eat it.
So
desserts don't have to be bad.
No. Okay. Well, making your desserts lower in fat. You've certainly changed that regular bread pudding recipe. I heard something back here that I didn't catch.
I said the chocolate ones are the best.
Okay.
But there, if you use cocoa, you could avoid some
fat. You can get the fat down too. Well, I think one of the things I have to say is I'm a chocolate freak too. I sometimes call myself a chocoholic. But rather than saying no chocolate, I don't think you and I could manage to survive and say I'm never going to touch chocolate again. Maybe simply to say less One of the things I like to tell people is there are no forbidden foods, there are no bad foods, there are simply foods that appear low on the pyramid that we should eat lots of, and ones at the top. It says, up here it doesn't say never eat fats, oils, and sweets, it says eat sparingly. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the messages, is to live in moderation. Everything needs to be moderate. What else could we do that might make a difference in our health?
Yeah. Those of us who work, it's easy to make salads though ahead of time, like your lettuce with the Tupperware we have now, or the sealed packet.
Okay.
I make a lot of homemade soup, and I make a big Dutch oven bowl so that we do eat 3 days on the same meal.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you know, when you come home, you're tired, and the worst thing is cooking after a day to work till 7:30.
But when you start, when you make large quantities, it cuts down on the amount of fuel it takes to make your meal. Mm-hmm. So that
and time.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Make large quantities for several meals. Freeze, microwave.
Yeah, I have trouble with microwave because I believe my college professor with all the radiation and the damage that the microwave does to food. So I have to throw the microwave out.
Okay, well, that's something that you have to look at the evidence on both sides.
I think changing.